and her brother Billy. They showed up in a handicap accessible van with Eric at the wheel, and Billy in the back in his wheelchair. He has dysarthria and is mostly nonverbal, but I found it easy to communicate with him. He's an incredibly happy young man who reacted with pure joy as I took him around the ranch and introduced him to the animals. In addition to the horses, we have some milk goats and chickens, as well as a few very lovable dogs. I've currently got one of the baby Nigerian dwarf goats curled up on his lap as I encourage him to hold the bottle at the right angle for feeding. His smile is broad and unending. Blue leans against one of the corners of the small shelter within the goat pen, watching with pure and unadulterated love in her expression. She'd taken over the care of her brother after their parents died. Glancing over my shoulder, I see some of the wives and girlfriends working at long tables we'd set up outside the gray barn, loaded down with enough food to feed everyone when they come in. Two of the players man the large gas-fueled barbecue pit just beyond, smoke and meaty smells drifting on the wind. "I can't believe Tacker put all this together," I tell Blue, before giving my attention back to Billy. Making a small adjustment to the angle of his hand, I encourage him. "Here, hold it up just like this."
"Okay,"
he manages to say, his head rocking slightly as he grins. "Great job," I praise him. "Tacker is like a brand new person," Blue says. I smile. While I can't divulge anything, I can definitely compliment him. He's accomplished a lot in the last few weeks. "He smiled this morning, and I almost fell over," Blue says dramatically. Her eyes drift to her brother, going even softer. "But he has always smiled at Billy. Tacker's always had a remarkable friendship with him, so while he may have been closed away from much of the world, he never was from my brother." The sounds of laughter catch our attention, and we both glance toward the barn again. The workforce is arriving en masse, ready to get their grub on. They'd been hard at work for about 3 hours. The plan was to eat now, then they were going to hit it for a few more hours. I was so blown away by them, generously volunteering an entire day. And there's just no way I can repay them all. "Hey, Billy," I say, starting to pull the bottle from his hand and the baby goat from his lap. "Looks like it's about time to eat." Of course, I get another bright smile. We make our way over to the burgeoning crowd, where I'm introduced to the people I haven't met before. I make small talk and direct people to coolers filled with water, soda, and beer. Moving over to the food tables, I try to make sure everything is in order. But I'm shooed away by Dax's wife, Reagan, who assures me that she has it all under control. Taking me by the shoulders, she forces me into the line so I can get a plate of food myself. When I have my lunch, I scan for a place to settle in. My eyes catch on Tacker, where he leans against the paddock fence with a bottle of water in his hand. He's talking to Dominic Carlson, and I figure it's a good opportunity to gush over his generosity again. As I make my way there, I can feel the moment Tacker's gaze falls on me. Dominic is saying something to him as I approach. It's obvious Tacker is actively listening. But his eyes stay on me the entire time I walk toward them. His lips curl up, eyes crinkling slightly in a greeting that seems to imply, "Glad you came this way." It also says that despite his best efforts to be sociable with everyone, it's still tough, and I'm his safety net. Dominic also smiles in greeting. Extending my arm, I hand my plate to Tacker. "You need to eat." He takes it from me, glancing down at the food before tilting his head at me.
"You need to eat too."
"I'll get something soon," I reply before addressing Dominic. "I really can't thank you enough for the tractor. It's far more generous than I deserve."
"Oh, I doubt that,"
Dominic drawls, his eyes darting a moment to Tacker before returning to me.
"I think this place is amazing and the work you do is incredible. I'm more than glad to help."
I incline my head. "Well, thank you again. Along with your other donation, it will make a huge difference here on the ranch. Dominic's attention lights on something behind me, and I twist to see what. It's just a group of players, but he's clearly interested in them because he murmurs, "If you two would excuse me." He walks off without a backward glance, heading toward them.
"He's got a thing for Dax's sister," Tacker says with a chuckle. "I expect he's going to try to poach some information from him while he can."
Curious, I shift slightly to see. Sure enough, Dominic heads straight for Dax, who is sitting at one of the picnic tables bent over a plate of ribs. "Got a thing for his sister?" I ask for clarification. Tacker shrugs, transfers the plate I'd handed him to his good hand, and picks up the plastic fork resting on the edge with his casted hand. He spears a piece of potato salad.
"It's all gossip to me, really, but those guys gossip with the best of them."
I snicker, then lean up against the post. "Oh, do tell." Tacker puts the bite in his mouth. As he chews, he points at the table where Dominic has now taken a seat right beside Dax, who appears decidedly uncomfortable. After swallowing, Tacker says,
"While I was working out the other day, legend told me that, about a month ago, Dominic apparently showed up at the rookie party Dax's sister had also crashed. Supposedly, they hooked up. Since then, he's been pursuing her, but she's been dodging him."
Sounds romantic. I sigh, wondering what type of woman would run from Dominic Carlson's advances. Tacker's lip quirks up in a half smile.
"You're a romantic, huh?"
"For the right situation," I reply a little coyly. "You?"
"Back in my glory days, I suppose I could have been called that. Been a while."
I'm pleased to hear Tacker talk so effortlessly about his past life and the man he used to be, especially since I don't detect a single note of apprehension in his tone. I don't want it to turn awkward in any way, though. Tacker does best with small doses of conversation. So I pat him on the arm, then gesture slyly over to the picnic table. "I think you should go eavesdrop to see what's going on, and I expect you to report back to me on the situation at some point." Chuckling, Tacker dips his head.
"On it."
I watch a moment as he saunters over to his friends, his teammates, the ones who have had his back from the start and who are now starting to see some rewards in return. I have high hopes for that man, and I try to ignore the tiny kernel of care I'm starting to feel for him. I mean, I care for all my clients. With Tacker, though, we have a bond based on similar struggles. I've not connected with someone like this in an exceptionally long time. When my stomach rumbles, I decide ribs, potato salad, and baked beans are calling my name. I plan to go out and work with them after we eat, since Blue said she was taking Billy back to his group home to get some rest. He's had a big day. I fill my plate, grab a bottle of water from the cooler, and purposely avoid the table where the first line congregates. Tacker's presence has pulled the others around. Smiling, I see Raoul sitting against the side of the barn, a paper plate loaded with food on his lap. I wander over to my old friend and father figure, sitting beside him. "How are you holding up?" I ask. I had kind of hoped he was being more of a supervisor out there today, handing out orders to the young men, but knowing him, probably not.
"Fit as a fiddle,"
he replies, taking a bite of cornbread. "Can you get over that tractor?" I ask, once again giddy over such an amazing donation. "Do you know all the things we can do with that thing?"
"Good night, little gator."
Raoul chuckles, putting our little transport ATV to rest in his mind. We eat in companionable silence for a little bit, before Raoul tips his head up, scanning all the people who are shiny with sweat, laughing and joking with each other, and enjoying the food.
"You stumbled into a new community by knowing Tacker," he observes. "Trust me, those people out there will be friends of the ranch for life merely by what you've done for that man."
"I've not done anything," I demur, because my job is to merely listen and encourage. Tacker's done all the hard work. I'm really proud of him. I take a bite of potato salad. It's so good, I shove in another. When I swallow, I offer, I'm weirdly excited about going to the game after they get back from their road trip. Raul chuckles.
Hockey's a great sport.
I knew Raul would be excited about it. He loves all sports. When he's not busy working his hind end off, I can usually find him in front of a TV, watching ESPN or something sports-related.
So,
he drawls hesitantly, a sure sign he's about to change the subject. By the tone of his voice, I can tell it's a radical change.
Tomorrow's going to be a tough day for you. Want to get away from the ranch and go do something? Maybe a movie.
A jab of anxiety hits me deep in my tummy. But it's quickly washed away by the flow of love for this man who is always looking out for me. He's been with me through 19 birthdays, and he knows how hard they are. Tomorrow is March 3rd. I'll be 32 years old. It's also the anniversary of the Serb attack on my village, and the 20-year anniversary of the day I watched my grandfather, father, and brother murdered right in front of me. 20 years since my sister was handed over to soldiers and raped while I was forced to watch, even as my tears still poured from grief over the rest of my family. I've never celebrated my birthday since then. Never wanted to. Helen was always understanding of my choice. Instead, we celebrated the date of my adoption finalization, which is in November. It was a way for me to have cake and presents like other normal kids. But on March 3rd, I try to live my life as normally as possible while not avoiding the pain, because that's impossible. But as a reminder that I am quite the normal person, I have overcome much. While I'm still sad and grieve, I also flourish. I'll be fine tomorrow. I tip my head his way, giving him a quick, sly smile. Besides, aren't you just dying to play with the tractor tomorrow? That's way more fun than a movie. Raul's head falls back as he laughs, his hat catching on the side of the barn and tumbling off. His eyes are bright with humor when they land on me.
All right, then. I'll make you a non-celebratory birthday breakfast, and we'll spend the day playing with a new tractor.
Chapter 14. Tacker. For the life of me, I can't figure out why walking away from Nora to go sit with my teammates isn't sitting right with me. Might have to do with the fact I'd rather talk to her than them. I sure as hell like looking at her a lot more than I do them. Hell, just moments ago when she came toward me with a plate of food in her hand, I thought she might be the prettiest creature I'd ever seen. And yes, I felt a flush of guilt for feeling that way, because not only is she my therapist, but she's also not MJ. But MJ's gone. You're allowed to think other women are pretty, Tacker. Not really, asshole. Yes, really. And that's why I'm walking away after we made a little small talk. The truth is, because I want to stay and talk to her so badly is why I needed to walk away. I make my way to the picnic table, currently occupied by Dominic, Dax, Legend, and Aaron. The guys are big and the table is small, so I merely sidle to the edge of it, setting my plate down. The conversation between Dominic and Dax is already heated. Aaron and Legend listen with smirks on their face. For the last time, Dax says with frustration, I am not helping you hook up with my sister. Dominic is cool and unruffled. I don't need your help with that. I need your help figuring out how I can get her to give me the time of day. Not going to happen, Dax mutters. Why not? Dominic challenges. I'm smart, successful, and I'd treat her like a queen. Dex's eyes narrow as he leans in toward Dominic. I've seen the queens you've had in your stable. There are a lot. When Dominic shrugs, my eyes cut over to Aaron. I can read the expression on his face clearly. This is really good stuff. Extremely exciting. I smirk, refocusing my attention on Dominic as he replies to Dax in a calm, level manner.
Look, your sister is admittedly relationship averse, so why do you care if I am too? She's an adult who is more than capable of making her own decisions about whether she wants to go out with me or not.
Exactly, Dax grits out. So ask her and deal with it yourself.
I would if she'd respond to my calls and texts. It's like she's dropped off the face of the earth.
Kosovo, Dax says, the one word causing Dominic's eyebrows to rise and my stomach to clench.
Kosovo?
Dominic asks, a bit loudly. My head snaps over to where Nora and Raoul are sitting side by side at the barn, eating their food. They're far enough away, they can't hear this conversation, I think.
What the fuck is she doing in Kosovo?
Dominic demands, and my gaze jerks to Nora. Didn't appear to hear that either.
What do you mean, what the fuck is she doing in Kosovo?
Dax replies, just as loud and tauntingly.
You have no say where she goes.
Okay, I intervene, placing my palms on the picnic table and bending to put myself in their line of sight. I need both of you to shut the fuck up right now. The next man who says the word Kosovo is going to be eating my cast. Aaron's chin jerks inward with surprise, and Dax just blinks stupidly. Under his breath, Legend mutters,
"Damn."
Dominic cocks an eyebrow that seems to ask, "Did you just fucking threaten your boss with physical violence when you're already on probation on this team?" I sigh, cast one last glance at Nora, who laughs at something Raoul says before returning to my teammates. Taking a moment to let my gaze linger on each one, I finally settle on Dominic, since he's my boss and I need to explain. Just stop talking about Kosovo so loudly that Nora might hear.
Why?
Dominic demands curiously. Because she was part of the war there, and she lost family in that conflict, I reply quietly.
Oh, shit,
Aaron says, peering over at Nora.
What happened?
Dax asks. I wonder if I should say something. Nora never said what happened is a secret, and in fact, it was national news. Still, it's a confidence she shared with me that, until she says otherwise, has to stay between us. So, I give them only the bare minimum. Let's just say what she witnessed happen to her family is horrific, and tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of it.
Jesus,
Dominic whispers, empathy infusing his face.
It helped you to open up to her, didn't it?
Aaron asks. He's my best friend. Can't lie to him. Completely. I owe a lot to her for trusting me with her confidence. Made it a lot easier to talk about my shit, you know?
She seems pretty amazing,
Dominic says thoughtfully, his eyes moving over to where she's sitting.
Got your grumpy ass halfway smiling again.
All the guys chuckle, accepting the moment of levity because the situation had gotten way too serious. But then again, the shit that seems to surround me tends to be serious lately. I'm grateful for the moments where I can just laugh with my team right now.
Well, we got some more work to do,
Aaron says, swinging his legs out from the picnic table and grabbing his empty plate. Dax and Legend get up as well, ambling off to the garbage cans and grabbing more water bottles from the coolers. Dominic doesn't move, though. I wonder if he's going to call it a day or head out to work with us in the field. Thoughtfully, he stares off in the distance. I don't like to think about what calculations he might be making in that brain of his. Finally, he says, I'm really glad you landed here with Nora for your counseling. Me too. I agree, thinking Dr. Dumbfuck would have most likely made things worse for me. Have you thought about asking her out? Dominic asks carefully. Startled by the suggestion, I suck in air and actually choke. When a coughing fit ensues, Dominic casually passes over his bottle of water for me to take a sip. I chug it, using the few moments to help clear my thoughts and calm myself down so I don't call him a dumb fuck once I'm able to breathe again. He just watches me impassively, waiting for me to say something. When I do, I try to play it cool. Excuse me? Ask Nora out, he repeats. Why would I do that? I ask, offended. She's my therapist, for God's sake. Although, damn if I don't find myself drawn to her for so many other reasons than she's a great listener and gives amazing advice. A rush of guilt floods me, and I feel as if I just betrayed MJ by having that thought. Fuck. Who cares if she's your therapist? Dominic says blandly. I'm sure you two wouldn't be the first to break rules like that. This is ridiculous. I cock an eyebrow. You do realize it's you who required me to seek counseling to stay on this team, and now you're actually trying to sabotage it, right? No, he says firmly, shaking his index finger. I'm not trying to sabotage it at all, merely trying to point out something I think could be good for you both. You two obviously have a good connection, a bond even. I hate him for saying that shit out loud, because the minute he did, he opened the possibility up to me. I don't know if my head would have ever gone there on its own, but now I can feel it taking root. It doesn't help I'm enamored of her, attracted to her physically too. But that's all stuff I've kept compartmentalized because I knew the importance of appreciating her as a counselor. Fuck Dominic, but now he's making me wonder. He swings his legs out from the picnic table, tapping his knuckles on it for effect. Not even going to tell you to think about it, Tacker. Just keep an open mind. Lifting my chin in acknowledgement, because he owns the team and I don't want to be disrespectful, I make it seem like I'll do just as he asks. However, there's no fucking way I'm going to think about Nora like that. No way, no how. Dominic leaves, heading in Nora and Raul's direction. They both stand and shake hands with him when he gets there, which indicates he's going to be leaving soon. While his words unsettled me just now, I still can't help but be extremely impressed by his personal interest in this team. Coming out here, bringing Nora that tractor. I hate to admit it because I'm pissed about where he just went with Nora and me. But damn it, he's a good guy. Reagan walks by, pausing to ask if I need anything. I still haven't eaten much yet, so I take a seat at the table and a rib in hand. I shake my head. Just 5 minutes to eat and I'll be ready to get back out there. Okay, she says, starting to move off. But then something strikes me, something I'd been thinking about for a few days but had been struggling with. Hey, Reagan. She pivots. What's up? I actually need some help baking something tomorrow morning, I say. Reagan moves a few steps closer, frowning at my statement.
Baking?
Yeah, a cake, I clarify. And, well, I suck at anything involving baking or cooking. I could use some help.
I can't tomorrow, she says with heavy regret. I'm pulling a shift at the clinic.
Okay, I say. No worries.
She smiles and leaves, heading over to where Dax stands with Aaron and Legend. She wasn't allowed to work with us today. Dax's orders, given her hospitalization last week. She'd stayed up here at the barn, helping with food and just chilling with the other wives and girlfriends. Reagan's assimilating into the team family well.
We're heading out, Tacker,
I hear Eric say, and I twist to look his way. He's pushing Billy's wheelchair, Blue walking behind them.
He's tired, and we're going to get him back.
I knew they wouldn't stay the entire day, but I'm so appreciative of them coming out for a bit. Leaning to the side, I reach my hand out to Eric. He leans over to shake mine. Thanks for coming out, brother.
Thanks for inviting us,
Blue says with a smile.
Billy had a wonderful time.
Billy's smile is wan. He's totally whipped. I reach out to him, closing my hand into a fist. Got a bump for me? His smile gets a little bigger. While he can't extend his arm all the way due to contractures, I'm close enough that our fists are able to touch. Fist bump, I exclaim. Opening my hand, I make an explosion sound. Blow it up. Billy rocks with laughter, grinning broadly now before yawning. They start to move off, but then another thought hits me. Hey, Blue? She turns to me questioningly. You know how to bake? I ask.
Yeah,
she replies, her head tilting.
What's up?
I really need help tomorrow morning with making something. I'm going to screw it up if I don't have help, and I can't afford to screw it up. It's important.
No, no, no!
Eric answers for her, taking 3 steps toward us while pulling Billy's wheelchair with him.
You promised tomorrow to me, babe, remember?
Blue looks torn because I apparently just intruded on their plans. But fuck it. I really need the help, and it's super important. So I pull out a card I had not ever considered playing, pinning Eric with my gaze. You remember when you needed a favor and I came through for you without hesitation? Eric's shoulders slump, and he nods. He's remembering back when things had gone to hell between him and Blue, and he asked me to go check on Billy for him. I'd been on suspension and hadn't minded in the slightest, but still, he'd told me he owed me one, and I could collect at any time. I only need her for maybe an hour, dude, I tell Eric. And we can do it early, so it shouldn't interfere with your plans.
I'd love to help you,
Blue says with a reassuring smile, putting her hand on Eric's shoulder. She squeezes, adding to me,
6 a.m. okay?
Fuck, that was early, but yes, that works for me. Sounds awesome, thanks.
What are we baking?
She asks. Schindetli, I reply.
What's that?
No clue, but I'll figure it out tonight and buy all the stuff. Can we do it at your house? I don't really have anything to bake with at my place.
Sure,
she replies, looking very intrigued. I hope I'm doing the right thing by trying to make this for Nora. It has meaning for her, but I also know tomorrow will be a rough day for her. I want to do something nice as a means of thanking her for sharing her pain with me, and so she knows she's got a friend to lean on.
Chapter 15. Nora. Starlight navigates the rocky trail with ease, her gait smooth and self-assured. I'd saved her from the meat market 2 years ago. She'd easily been given up by her owners because she'd been a little wily. Yet when I brought her to the ranch, she was the sweetest girl ever. I think she somehow knew she'd been saved, so she decided to turn over a new leaf. She's proof anyone can find happiness, even after the darkest of times. I guess I am too. Today's the anniversary of the darkest day of my life, yet I've never felt more alive or free. Riding Starlight across the ranch I own, where I can give back and help others find their own healing, is a symbol this day is not to be feared. I can be sad, I can reflect. I can grieve again. But I can also leave that behind when I'm done to face the brightness that is otherwise my life. True to form, I started my day with the smell of good cooking. Raul was in my kitchen whipping up huevos rancheros for me. After a great breakfast with strong coffee, we did our morning chores together like we always do. Feed the animals, clean pens and stalls, make sure all troughs are full of water, and exercise any of the horses that weren't on the rotation for lessons or counseling sessions. A normal day, in most respects. I woke up a year older. I started a new year of life. But while birthdays are a celebration of life, there was just too much death attached to mine. As such, from my very first birthday after moving to the States with Helen, I had asked that we not actually celebrate it. That was tough on her, being a new mom and all. She wanted things to be perfect for me. But she also respected the healing I needed to do. Helen knew how raw things were for me, and she'd paid special attention to the difficulties I faced, losing my family, moving to a new country with a virtual stranger, and mastering a new primary language. She reluctantly agreed to ignore my birthday on its actual date that year. The following year, I asked for the same again, and again, and so forth and so on, until it had become a habit. By my mid-20s, I'd been more years without celebrating my birthday than celebrating it, and it was my new normal. And let's face it, in Kosovo, we led a poor life. My dad farmed. We didn't have money for fancy cakes, balloons, or presents. We barely had enough to feed ourselves. So a celebration was Besiana making a favorite cake. It was simple, sweet, and nothing more than was needed. Regardless, I did celebrate my adoption day with Helen. It became our time together to rejoice in my joining her family. Helen never married. In the time I lived with her, she never even dated anyone. She insisted she was happy raising me alone, and I was happy having her devoted attention. After bringing me to the States, she left her work as a contractor with NATO and went back to utilizing her degrees in psychology by doing family counseling. I, of course, followed in her footsteps. I had been so moved by what she'd done for me and how she helped others that I couldn't ever imagine doing anything different. Helen didn't have an extended or close family. She had a wayward brother back east that I met twice in my lifetime, who wasn't overly interested in an adopted niece. Her parents had both died, and the few aunts, uncles, and cousins I had, I really didn't know. Helen had been a traveler and a pioneer, preferring to spend much of her life in war-torn countries helping victims of violence. So it was just me and her. Her death left an immense hole within me. Luckily, my work here helped to refill the well. The ranch itself fills it. It's why after I'd finished chores, I saddled up Starlight and headed out for a ride. The sun feels amazing. The birds are making music, and the desert landscape always soothes me. Arizona is truly my home, and Drenica is far behind me. My life here is full and complete. Starlight and I don't stay out long. I head back after about half an hour, stopping briefly to dismount and study a long snakeskin left behind by a rattler on the side of the trail. I love nature, even the scary parts of it. I consider bringing it back to show Tacker next time he comes for counseling, but then think better of it. If he knows I found it near the horse trail, I'll never get him in the saddle for a ride. The ride back is smooth. I consider detouring off into one of the pastures to let Starlight have a bit of a run. But as the gray barn comes into view, my heart skips a beat when I notice Tacker's truck parked beside it. I can see him and Raul near the rear, both their forearms resting on the truck bed as they talk. I have no clue why Tacker's here. We don't have a counseling session. After the full day of work he and the team gave me yesterday, he simply can't be here to do more work. That would just be way too much on his part. Their heads swivel when they hear Starlight's hooves crunching behind them, Tacker's eyes coming straight to mine. His smile is easy, and he probably doesn't even understand what an accomplishment that is. What are you doing here? I ask with a returned smile. After I dismount, I hand the reins to Raoul, who'd moved over to take Starlight from me. As he leads the horse away, Tacker points to the back of his truck. I take a few steps over to peer in. The entire bed is filled with bags of chicken feed. Questioningly, I raise an eyebrow. He shrugs.
I stopped by the tractor supply store on the way in. And what do you know? Chicken feed was on sale. Knew you couldn't ever have enough.
Oh my God, I say, my hand coming near my neck to flutter there a moment. Donations are always welcome, but they are so few and far between. Every little bit helps. Thank you, Tacker.
Not a big deal,
he says, his cheeks flushing. Because he's embarrassed, I don't make a big deal of it, except it is a big deal. A mere 3 weeks ago, Tacker probably wouldn't have gone out of his way to pee on someone who was on fire. And now he's giving of himself selflessly. This is important because, as I told him before, generosity toward others is actually a healing act.
I have something else for you, he says, his tone slightly unsure and guarded.
I don't know the source of his anxiety right now, but I give him a reassuring smile. What is it?
Well,
he drawls as he steps around me to move to the passenger door of his truck.
I have no clue if this is any good or not. I made it myself, so most likely not. Actually, I had help making it. If it's bad, I'll blame it on Blue, but...
I move in behind him, shamelessly standing on tiptoes to see what he has, as he leans into his truck. He pulls out a plastic cake plate with a frosted domed hood, which makes it impossible to see what's inside. Tacker turns toward me, flips a latch on one side, and opens the top to reveal the contents. When I see what's there, my jaw drops open.
Shendetli,
I whisper. I hadn't seen one in years, and only had a handful in my youth, yet I'd never forget it. Leaning forward, I inhale the smell of honey and walnuts. I remember watching Besciana make the simple flour cake that is filled with nuts and sweetened with honey. When it's baked, it resembles a dry biscuit of sorts, but then it's soaked in a simple syrup that gives it a cake-like texture. Tacker clears his throat.
Like I said, no clue if it tastes good or not, but... Well...
My gaze rises from the cake to him. His face turns red, and he glances over to the barn, perhaps seeking some type of assistance from Raoul, because he seems totally lost. When his attention comes back to me, he says,
I don't know if this is appropriate. I know it's your birthday, and that this day represents the worst day of your life, too. I'm not a counselor, so I don't know if this is helpful or harmful. But I just felt like you should have something meaningful today. If this is wrong, tell me now. I'll go dump this in the trash.
I immediately put my hand on Tacker's arm, feeling my heart soften. Hopefully my expression conveys just how perfect this is. There's a hard lump in my throat, but I talk past it. It's the most wonderful thing ever. Truly. Tacker lets out a huge sigh of relief, then mutters, Thank fuck.
I doubted myself a million times before I came out here this morning. I think I stopped for the chicken feed because at least I'd have something I knew you'd love if I'd fucked up the cake thing.
I tip my head back and laugh, loving the fact he can admit his doubts. While Tacker may be a man mired in anger, guilt, and grief, he's always had a healthy ego. It's nice to see that he keeps it in check with some admitted insecurities. Want to join me in a piece of cake? I ask. He flips the lid down, then latches it.
Sure.
In my kitchen, I take the holder from Tacker. Want some coffee?
Nah, I'm good.
Grab some bottles of water out of the fridge then, I say, as I pull two plates out of a cupboard. Using the task of cutting the cake, I try to gather my thoughts. I'd spent so many years avoiding acknowledgement of my birthday that this cake seems like an enormously life-changing event. Not a bad thing, but one I wasn't prepared for today.
Be honest,
Tagger says, just as I pick up both plates to carry them over to the table. He meets me there, taking one out of my hand.
Was this okay? Making something from your past that might potentially bring up bad memories.
I nod at the chair Tacker should sit in. To my surprised delight, he pulls mine out first. I sit and wait for him to do the same, the two pieces of cake momentarily forgotten. I never want to avoid memories, even if painful, I say. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with you doing something like this. I'd just gotten so used to ignoring my birthday and focusing on my adoption day with Helen instead. I'd honestly forgotten what it felt like to be joyful for my birth. So, thank you.
No, thank you, he replies solemnly. I just wanted to do something to show you how much I appreciate all you've done for me.
I shake my head, pulling my cake plate toward me. I haven't done anything but my job.
Not true, he replies as he picks up his fork. You shared your history with me, and you didn't have to do that. I know that's not part of regular therapy, but I want you to know, had you not done that, we wouldn't be sitting here right now having this discussion. It helped more than you could possibly realize.
I smile, taking my fork in hand. Then I'm very glad I did.
Does it get easier? He asks. Talking about it, I mean.
Yeah, I say confidently. It does get easier. I remember every time I told my story to someone, a counselor, a teacher, or a new friend, it came out a little smoother. Each time I felt a bit more empowered that I could handle it.
Tacker appears troubled. Is it a secret?
A secret? You mean what happened to my family? He nods, regarding me intently. God, no! I exclaim with a light laugh. I mean, it's part of who I am, and I'd never think to hide a part of me. Why? His gaze drops a moment before sliding up, a tinge of guilt there.
Because I told a few people about it yesterday. It came up inadvertently, because Dax's sister is actually in Kosovo now. She's a photojournalist doing a follow-up story to the war. They were loudly talking about it. I asked them to hold it down so you wouldn't hear, and, well, a discussion ensued. I told them about it, not in any detail or anything, but just that you were there and had lost family.
Without thought, I reach across the table and take Tacker's hand. It jerks in mine, but I grip him tightly. It's okay. I don't mind anyone knowing the details. It's not something I'm ashamed of, and it doesn't hurt me to talk about it anymore. I promise. A gust of relieved air pushes out of his mouth.
Thank fuck.
Laughing, I slide my hand free of his. With a pointed look at my plate, I ask, shall we try this?
You first,
he says with a grin, nodding at my plate,
in case it sucks.
Ruefully, I shake my head and plunge my fork in. I scoop up a piece and bring it right to my mouth, letting it sit on my tongue for just a moment so I can relish the flavors of my youth. I give a tiny moan, closing my eyes as I start to chew.
Oh my God,
I say, with my mouth full of honey, nuts, and heaven.
That's amazing, Tacker.
Seeming pleased with my reaction, he doesn't wait, sliding his utensil in to grab a bite. He chews, swallows, and nods in appreciation.
Damn, that's really sweet. But I like it.
We eat in companionable silence, and when we're finished, we carry our plates to the sink, where Tacker makes to wash them, but I wave him off. I'll get those later.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna unload that chicken feed and head out, he says.
Thank you again, I say softly. And without thought, I move into him with my arms raised for a hug. He bends, accepting my embrace, and I give him a tight squeeze. After a second of hesitation, his arms go around my waist. We stay just like that for a moment more. When we pull back, we do so slowly. I don't know if he feels the same, but weirdly, I regret the loss of contact. His cheek scrapes along mine as we start to disengage from the hug. Neither one of us makes eye contact as we complete the final break. Tacker pushes his hands down into the front pockets of his jeans, and I take a slight step back. You know, I start, since I think it needs to be said. I'm really proud of the efforts you've made. You've done things that have been really difficult and outside your comfort zone.
All because of you, he reminds me.
No, all because of you, I insist. He smiles awkwardly.
Actually, going to be a little weird not to see you this upcoming week because of the away games.
You have my cell number, I say. Feel free to call me if you need to talk. His eyes are inscrutable, but then he nods with a slight smile.
Okay. Thanks.
Come on, I say, throwing my thumb over my shoulder. I'll help you unload the feed. We head out to the barn, Raoul nowhere in sight. Tacker and I make short work of stacking the burlap bags in an empty stall. I walk with him back out to his truck. As he opens the door, he gives me a last look.
Week after next, we're back on, right?
Yep. I assure him, knowing deep in my gut that I'll be looking forward to seeing him again. Whatever works best with your practice and game schedule, I'll move some things around if I have to. Okay, that sounds a little too exuberant.
And you and Raoul are coming to the home game that week, right?
We wouldn't miss it, I assure him, which is the truth. I'm excited about checking out a live hockey game while watching Tacker out on the ice. I just know it's going to be something special to see.
All right, then, he says.
But he makes no move to get in his truck. Just stands there and fidgets. If I don't say something to help him on his way, I'll probably be lulled into just staring right back at him. So I hold my hand up in a farewell as I take a few steps back. Safe travels. Lay your ass off. Grinning, Tacker climbs into his truck. I turn my back on him to head into the barn, listening to the rumble of his engine as he starts it. Long after the sound recedes down the drive, thoughts of Tacker swirl through my mind.
Chapter 16. Tacker. I wasn't prepared for the rush of emotion that hit me when I stepped out onto the ice for warm-ups half an hour ago. Now, with the game about to start, my place secured back on the first line at center ice, I'm actually worried my legs might give way. They went a little jiggly as it hit me all at once. I was back in the game. What was my sole reason for living after the crash, and the one thing that had kept me going until I metaphorically crashed again? Nora had texted a few hours ago as we were on our way from the team hotel to the arena. We're playing the Seattle Storm, who happened to be sitting near the bottom of the standings. While players can never take any game for granted, it does help my nerves that we're playing one of the lower-ranked teams for my return debut. Nora's text helped. It simply said, "Enjoy the moment." She's talking about right now, with my nerves buzzing and my adrenaline surging, the scream of fans and the energy pouring off my teammates. My legs strengthen and my backbone locks. I'm ready and I fucking love it. The ref moves into the circle right up to where Bishop faces off against his opponent for the face-off. His eyes cut to me briefly, and he winks. Not a facial muscle of mine moves in response. I'm fucking ready to play. For a man wearing a cast on a wrist that was fractured 5 weeks ago and who had only been back at practice for 2 weeks, I played a damn good game. My biggest accomplishment is in not getting in a fight. As a center, I'm a shooter, not a fighter. That means I'm relied on to score, not to play defense or get tough with other players. My body is too valuable to mess it up in a slugfest, so I'm rarely enticed into a fight. But that didn't stop the Storm players from trying to bait me. It was too good of an opportunity to pass up. Me, the man with a cast. While league regulations allow players to wear casts in a game, we are absolutely forbidden from fighting with one. As such, I stepped out onto the ice tonight expecting players to push me to my limits. Most opposing players would not be sad to see me suspended again. I kept my cool all night. I played well, even if not stellar, and that met everyone's expectations for the evening. I had one assist and a severely aching wrist as the final moments of the game ticked down. There's 37 seconds left on the clock, and the Storm is down 2-0. They have nothing to lose, so they pull their goalie once they gain possession of the puck. My line just stepped out, and our legs are fresh as we defend. Back and forth, they pass the puck, looking for the long shot or a quick dump inside for a goal. My back is to legend as I keep myself facing the action, letting my stick play loose. They make their move as the crowd's screams escalate in tune to the clock ticking closer to zero. With a sharp flick of the wrist, the puck makes it past Dax to the inside. Players crash the net, Aaron poke checks, and the biscuit shoots out toward me. Bishop has broken loose, and I tap it to him just as he crosses into the neutral zone. I follow, my eyes darting up to the clock to note 7 seconds left. Bishop carries the puck across the blue line, the empty net right in front of him. "Tacker!" he calls. To my surprise, he shoots it over to me. It's an easy flick of my wrist, a snap of my stick blade, and the puck easily glides in for a goal. The fucker didn't need to give me that point, but I'm not surprised he did. My team as a whole has gone way out of their way to make sure my return has been the stuff dreams are made of. They all surround me. Bishop, Dax, Aaron, Eric, and Legend. Pats of their gloved hands on my helmet, stick blades gently against my calves. Win, lose, or draw, I'm grateful for this moment. I'm back where I need to be, and there's no way I'm ever fucking this up again. Oddly, I wonder if Nora's watching on TV, and I don't even chastise myself for letting my thoughts go there. I hope she is watching, knowing that part of me being here is because of what she's done. The team continues to celebrate our win in the locker room. Shouts, loud jokes, slaps of towels on asses, something I had not participated in since coming to the Vengeance, and I actually don't participate in it now. It's a bit overwhelming, and while it felt natural on the ice to be back on the team, I'm not sure of my place here. I've caused a lot of hardship on this team because of my attitude and behavior, that this feels just a little too strange. Shower complete, I stand at my locker and work on getting dressed. We'll be taking the team bus back to the hotel. Because our next game isn't until day after tomorrow in Los Angeles, we'll stay overnight here. A hand comes down on my shoulder, and I twist my neck to see Rafe standing there.
"Awesome game, man. God help our opponents once that cast comes off."
My smile comes easy in response to the genuine nature of his praise. He's not bitter in the slightest that he's been bumped back to second line. "Thanks, Rafe. Appreciate it." He nods and drifts away.
"So, Truth, how'd it feel?"
Aaron says as he comes up to my side, a towel wrapped around his waist. Flipping a leg over the bench, he sits with legs splayed.
Great to be back on the ice?
Grimacing, I turn my head away.
Dude, I don't need to see your junk.
Snickering, Aaron pats his thighs. My man, this is what the ladies love, the wild secret place.
You're fucking gross,
I mutter, but I do it while suppressing a laugh. Aaron thinks he's God's gift to women, but he at least comes by it honestly. He's a fucking chick magnet. Swinging his leg over and then popping to his feet, he moves in closer to my locker and leans a shoulder against it. His expression turns serious.
But really, how did it feel out there? Because you looked like a different man out there.
That gives me pause, my fingers freezing on the buttons of my dress shirt. I ask, what do you mean?
I may be new to the team, but that doesn't mean I didn't watch you when I could on TV,
he says in a low voice. You played great this season, but you played with a weight on your shoulders. It was obvious. Tonight, though, you looked like you were having the time of your life out there. Probably only Aaron would ever notice that about me, and it makes me smile. And he's fucking right. It felt different out there. My gaze going to my buttons, I admit, I felt like me again out there. His hand comes to my shoulder, squeezes.
Happy for you, buddy.
Hey, if you two girls want to stop flirting with each other a moment,
a deep voice drawls from behind us.
I'm taking a head count for Fleming's.
Aaron's hand falls away, and we turn to see Bishop behind us.
First line celebration. You in? And you have to say yes, because otherwise it's not the first line.
My initial reaction is to decline. While my teammates never gave up on me this entire season and invited me to every single team function, I always said no. They probably wouldn't be shocked if I did the same right now. But then Nora's words come to me. Enjoy the moment. For some reason, it helps to know she is giving me tacit permission to enjoy this newfound reconnection to the sport and my teammates. It's validation that I'm allowed to do this without guilt weighing me down.
Yeah, we're in,
I tell Bishop, knowing Aaron wants to go. He's always up for a night out.
Really?
Bishop asks, sounding a bit thunderstruck over my acceptance. I roll my eyes.
Yeah, fucking really.
Bishop snorts and moves off, and I accept I might be the subject of some ribbing in the coming weeks as I acclimate into the team dynamic. Within half an hour, everyone is dressed and on the team bus. The ride to the hotel only takes about 10 minutes. When we disembark, we don't even enter the lobby. Fleming's, a highly recommended and posh steakhouse, is just a few blocks down, and we've already decided to walk to it. Bishop had called ahead for a table. There's 7 of us. Me, Aaron, Bishop, Legend, Dax, Eric, and Blue. Yes, this is a first-line dinner, but Blue travels with the team as a flight attendant, so she is automatically included. Part of being on a hockey team is the family dynamic. I've never had that be more apparent than on this team. Drinks are ordered, and I'm glad to see the guys don't feel like they have to abstain simply because I do. When they're in hand, Bishop holds his glass up, and we all follow. Gripping my glass of ice water, I feel my cheeks flush slightly when he says,
"Here's to Tacker. Glad to have you back on the ice, buddy. But more importantly, glad to have you back with us."
There's no missing the emphasis he puts on the words "with us." He means with us in spirit and determination. He means he's glad I've been able to move past that thing holding me back from truly bonding with my mates. It's an intimate statement, and while it embarrasses me, it also grounds me a bit. It makes me realize that what I'm doing, this journey I've undertaken to make my way back to a normal, fulfilled life, has great rewards at the end. Everyone says, "Hear, hear," and cheers. I take a sip of my ice water, the talk immediately shifting into hockey.
5 weeks until playoffs start, Bishop remarks. We've got a few tough hurdles to get over.
We've got this,
Eric, the one on the team with the biggest ego, says boldly.
As long as we continue to play the way we are,
Legend says wisely. You all have done a great job maintaining momentum after my fuck-ups, I tell the group, making sure I look around the table. I'm no longer captain, but I need to act like a leader. I'm sorry I put you all in such a bad position. I'll make it up to you, I promise.
Dude,
Aaron says dramatically from my left. He loops an arm around my shoulders, leans his head against me, and exaggerates a sob.
That was fucking beautiful.
Everyone laughs. I wrench my shoulder upward to dislodge him, muttering, "Fuck nut." More talk about playoffs ensues, and we place our orders. Food comes, then talk moves to family. Bishop mentions wedding plans for him and Brooke over the summer, to which he told us to save the weekend of July 8th. Legend gushed about his daughter Charlie for a while, which included passing around his phone to look at recent pictures. He's also planning a wedding to Pepper, but he stated they were going to elope to do the deed. Somehow, I doubt that, but we'll see.
I'm going out to Sharon Ranch this weekend,
Blue announces, and that catches my attention for sure. Her eyes come to mine.
I really respect what Nora's doing out there, and it's a great way to do some volunteer work. Plus, Billy loves it there.
She's a fucking cool woman,
Eric says in agreement. That is something that can't be denied and should be celebrated. I've never met anyone like her, I tell my teammates, and they all go still, eyes glued to me in shock that I'd make such a candid and personal statement. Their wide, unblinking eyes make me laugh.
What? Too much sharing?
Bishop shakes his head.
No way, dude. You can tell us anything.
My gaze moves from player to player, hitting on Blue, who gives me an encouraging smile. Back to Bishop, I say. You, Eric, and Blue weren't sitting at the table with us out at the ranch when we were eating, but I'd told the rest of the gang something I'd learned about Nora. I didn't tell them everything, though, as I didn't want to divulge any secrets she had, but she told me I could share it. Most frown in confusion.